You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy. Welcome to Mom and Doc Talk. We are thrilled to have our first guest for this season, Kelly Nicasio. She is a licensed in marriage and family therapist who practices in Westlake Village, California. She has 14 years of experience treating children and adolescents with a variety of concerns, including behavioral issues, trauma, attention disorders, ADHD, adjustment disorder, issues related to adoption, obsessive compulsive disorder, grief, generalized anxiety, separation anxiety, and depression. So it probably sounds familiar to a lot of folks who are listening. She has specialty training in attachment and infant brain development, focusing on treatment with children ages birth to 5 years old. Kelly believes in strengthening the relationship between parents and children, in addition to helping parents manage difficult behaviors. So Kelly, I have to tell you, we've been so excited about this conversation for lots of reasons. So you came to us through a member of our team who had worked with you sort of before you understood anything about this world that we're talking about. So I don't want to dive in and tell your story. So I just want to say welcome. And we're very excited to have this conversation with you. And let's just dive in.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I am honored. I'm humbled to be here. And I'm really, really excited. So thank you.
Fantastic. I'm just, like I said, I can't wait to hear so much of what you're going to share with us. So let's start off with how you found out about PAN. So from my understanding, because this is honestly the first time you and I have met, my understanding is that you found out about it in sort of a roundabout way. So can you tell us about how PANs first came into your attention and what role it has in your life now?
Yes. Okay. So I had to look back and do a little research on this and thinking about when was the very first, like when, what year was it? And it was 2018, and I was treating a six-year-old child in my practice, and we were working on her anxiety and OCD and behavioral issues like outbursts and just a lot of difficulty at school and at home with peers. And I was using a lot of my typical cognitive behavioral therapy techniques that I use with most kiddos who present with these issues, and she would make progress and then she would backslide and then she would make progress and then she would backslide. And I wasn't really sure what was happening. And her mother and I were kind of stumped. And so her mom decided to kind of look at other options, which I encouraged. So they looked at working with a behavioral therapist, more like kind of ruling out autism spectrum disorder. And at the same time, this mother was doing her own research and trying to figure out what is going on. As we know, mother's intuition is super strong and important. And so I honored that, and I honor it even more now. I was a mom at that point, but I just had a little one-year-old. So it was kind of fresh in the mom game. But now 7 years in, I definitely, or six and a half years in, I definitely really appreciate the mom intuition. So this client's mother did her own research and found out about this thing called PANs and pandas. And I had never heard of it before. At the time, I was no longer working with this client, but she still kind of shared with me what she was finding and was really excited that this sounded like something that she could pursue. And so I kind of, you know, made note of it, thought it was interesting, but didn't really do much with it. Unfortunately, honestly, looking back, I wish I had dove into it more. But that was my very first time hearing about it. And then it's kind of, well, it's definitely come full circle.
Yeah.
Because then in 2023, my own daughter just started displaying symptoms that I was kind of confused. Well, I wasn't really confused about. I had a feeling. Felt very familiar. So she was dealing with, it was after a really hard cold and flu season for her. So it was January of 2023, and she had been sick so much. And she basically one morning kind of woke up with really bad separation anxiety, OCD, And a lot, well, she, looking back, she had urinary frequency and the urgency, like for, I would say, a year and a half prior. So that was, looking back, when her very first symptom. So when all of these new symptoms popped up, my mom intuition was like, wait a minute, this sounds familiar. I feel like I've learned about this before. And I mean, I don't know if you want me to keep going, but that's.
Yeah, no, I want to hear how it's in your, like the role it has in your life now. I want to hear about your story for sure.
Okay, perfect. So then I did my own research. Of course, PANS and PANDAS pops up because I just had this gut, you know, obviously I treat OCD, but I'm like, this is more than that's, and it also would come and go. I knew it was worse after she got sick. She had never had separation anxiety in her life, was one of those kids who could just, bye mom, go to preschool, no problem. And then all of a sudden one day was screaming, crying when I left to go to the grocery store. And it was just so unlike her. And so when I researched again and found PANS and PANDAS, I was like, this is it. This is what we're dealing with. I'm like really sure of this. So I'm a big podcast fan. And so I immediately, you know, I like to listen to them when I'm getting ready in the morning. So it was, you know, January, I think, of last year, 2023. And I searched just PANS and PANDAS in my podcast app. And the very first episode, I was like, I'm just going to listen to the first thing that pops up. And it was an interview, Dr. Barr, with you. And I actually don't, I have to look at see which one it was, but it was, you were a guest on another podcast. And mm-hmm. So I started listening, and everything you were sharing just made complete sense. And so in the beginning of that episode, you immediately had introduced your Facebook group. And so I stopped the podcast. I went and I logged on to Facebook, which I don't even have on my phone anymore. So I go to my computer, log on, request to join the Facebook group, and then go back and start getting ready and continue listening to the podcast. And then within a few moments, minutes even, I received a message from my previous client's mom back from 2018, saying, I'm a moderator on this Facebook group. and I, like, she obviously recognized my name, and it's been a long time. And so it was really fascinating that my very first reference to PANS and PANDAS was then kind of my lead and a familiar face into getting my own daughter help. I felt like it was a very interesting moment that, you know, this was it, and also felt like I was on the right track then later going into using homeopathy, but we can talk more about that.
Yeah. Well, my first thing I'm struck by is this is just a perfect example of the way this community like comes together and comes back together and comes back around, and that you will see people again and again that you will connect with and that will do what they can to support you and to, you know, the people who are out there talking about it so that people are more aware of this condition itself, and then showing up to support and help people through the process as well. Like, this is truly, I don't know about your experience, but in my experience, this is truly the most compassionate and giving group of people that I have ever seen. This community where we truly see so many people like lifting each other up every chance that they get. And I love that so much. And it helps restore my faith in humanity when I'm struggling to see people really, truly come and support strangers just because they've got some common thread that connects them. I'm like dying to talk to you about so many things, both as a mom dealing with this, and I, you know, we want to hear your journey and your experience, whatever you're willing to share, both as a mom and with what you're seeing with your daughter, and her healing process and like what you've gone through, your decisions with that, and then also as a therapist. And so we're probably going to ping pong around because the truth is it's like so intermingled and so interconnected, right? So I want to dig in first to the therapy side of things. And I'm curious if you can share with us about how PANS has really influenced your therapy practice.
Yeah. Well, I will say that now after living with it, living with a child with PANS, I can spot it much more easily in my practice. I'm not going to say I 100% know every time a kid comes in, you know, but as I'm sure the both of you, after being around it and working with it for so long, have this kind of feeling when it is. I mean, you have to do your due diligence and obviously assess, but I will say that it's just there's this feeling that I can also get now, almost more intuitive, which is super helpful. But then I also know what I'm looking for. You know, the coming and going of symptoms, the flares, as we call them, and sudden onset. I wouldn't say every case is that way, but that's kind of can be kind of tricky. But basically, I've just started assessing for it. So as soon as I hear anxiety, I'm looking to see if there's OCD, which I do anyway, but I'm a little more thorough now than I was prior to working with PANS or knowing about PANS and PANDAS. OCD in general can be tricky to spot because sometimes the compulsions aren't visible, right? They're not always hand washing or checking the locks on the doors. They're mental sometimes. And so it can be really hard to know if a child is truly struggling with OCD or if it's just anxiety. So I'm spending more time now in general just ruling out OCD, and therefore that would lead me down the PANS pathway. I'm looking for, you know, if they had any kind of autism, like questions about maybe being diagnosed with autism as a child, or because I will have parents say, well, they thought maybe they were on the spectrum, but they're not really. And so that will kind of tip me off. I'll do more digging with that. I think in general, I'm just spending more time. And I will say in the last year, I've had several clients that I have diagnosed with this, and it's more than I've ever diagnosed in my practice, but it's not because they weren't there. It's because I was probably missing. I wasn't seeing it. So, which is sad and unfortunate, but I'm also just trying to move forward and trying to educate other therapists because this is more prevalent than I think anyone realizes. I mean, I don't have a huge caseload, right? I have about anywhere from 15 to 20 clients per week. And I would say like I've had 4 or 5 in the last year that either were for sure PANS or I still suspect could be, but they didn't really pursue, you know, moving forward with it. And then I look back at my caseload. You know, I've been doing this work for about 14 years now, and I look back and I think about those really tough cases that didn't respond to treatment. And I for sure think that a lot of those were PANS kids.
Yeah, I can relate to that because, you know, my practice when I first started as a naturopathic doctor was a more broad mental health focused practice. And I knew about PANDAS and PANS because we could have a little bit of education about it in naturopathic medical school, but it's still like minimal. It's just not taught places. And so my expertise and everything has come from experience and like observing the people I work with, doing like reading the literature that does come out when it's available, attending any conference that's even remotely related, and like putting the pieces together myself. So I can imagine that in the therapy realm that it's even less accessible and available. And so it's huge that you're making a difference in helping people learn more about it. And I'm hoping that there's going to be some therapists who will listen to this episode and that maybe they can get some insights that can help them see ways that they might be able to understand that they might need a referral. And I too look back at my caseload and I see all these kids that I worked with that I'm like, oh, I totally missed it. This was a PANS case. And the good news is, like, you know, with homeopathy, it doesn't really make that huge of a difference other than like the guidance that I would have given them about how to interact with their psychiatrist or whoever it is that they were working with, and medications they were taking would have been a bit different had I caught it earlier. And I just wonder if I could have sped things up for some of those people or reduced some of their issues. So I think it's fantastic that you are doing the self-reflection and then sharing what you can. Just a quick comment. Then I've got a question about like types of therapies and things like that for parents to take into consideration. I have seen, and I want to see if you're seeing this too, that it's not just necessarily anxiety that can show up as OCD, especially in younger kids. Like, I think that for anybody who is listening to this who might be a professional, I think it's really important to recognize, and I'd like to hear your feedback on the people you have seen with this, that like anger could be OCD, depression could be OCD, that we just don't recognize that like the response that they're having to these intrusive and repetitive thoughts, or compelling thoughts, or compulsions, that they are, that it leads to like anger because they feel like their brain is attacking them and they feel like they can't stop these things from happening, or depression because they feel like they're stuck with this and they just, no matter what they do, they can't help it. So anxiety is a no-brainer that could potentially be OCD, but a lot of other presentations could potentially be OCD as well, in my experience. Have you noticed that at all?
Yes, and I think I'm still honestly wrapping my head around all of that because I totally agree with you. But it can be really tricky to tease out, and you
Yes.
have to know what questions to ask, and it takes some time sometimes because kids, aren't always, most of the time, they're not going to just sit down and say, "This is what I'm, thinking, and this is the response I'm having." So it's a lot of just spending time asking the right questions, observing, talking to parents, and it can take a little longer to get there, but I would agree with that it's not just the anxiety piece.
Yeah, and you're right. It does make it super tough because we sometimes, especially the younger kids, we're making assumptions, and so we shouldn't assume that if there's anger that it's definitely OCD, but their anger could be OCD. Just like anger could be depression, really is the root cause of it. That's just coming up across as anger, especially for younger boys. I see a lot of anger that's like is masking depression or anxiety.
Yes.
All right, so let's shift gears and talk about the therapies themselves. Do you think that there are certain types of therapies that are more likely to be beneficial in pandas kids or families, or certain ones that maybe should be avoided for these kids? Because just to set the framework, like I always say this, and I'm curious if you agree, you can't out therapy inflammation. And so some things I think are more likely to be beneficial than others, but you're obviously the expert. So what is your thought on
No,
these?
I agree with you. I don't think that, at least this is my opinion now at this point, but again, I'm 1 year into this game as a mother of a pandas kid and working with this in this capacity. So you could ask me later on and this might change. But at this point, I don't think it's so much that there are different therapies that are better, but it's the timing of it. So I think cognitive behavioral therapy is still a lot the gold standard for treating anxiety and depression, doing a lot of thought work, working on those intrusive thoughts. And then as far as OCD, specifically ERP, which is exposure and pr response prevention, which is a form of cognitive behavioral therapy. But it's really can be really intensive and difficult. And I do not recommend doing ERP in the beginning stages of healing. I think kids, and I even cognitive behavioral therapy, basic things like thought stopping, and sometimes that's just too much for kids when they're in the beginning of their healing. And so what I'll tell parents is, if we're pretty sure this is what's happening and they're pursuing, either, getting a proper diagnosis, or if they don't care about that, just doing treatment, I say, I'm here to support you. I know how tough this is because, and a lot of times I do share that I have dealt with this personally because it does, I think it gives me credibility, but it also lets parents know that I know what I'm talking about and it's really hard. And so I have that extra layer of empathy for them. And I will say, I'm here to support you. We can keep moving forward. But what I like to do most of the time is work with the parents and support them until their child is more healed. And then we can start doing some of that CBT, maybe even ERP, if the OCD isn't taken care of with whatever other treatment they're pursuing. Or I'll say, we can pause treatment. You can come back to me if you need me later. But I'm very open with them and sharing exactly what you shared is that you can't treat this inflammation with therapy alone. It might be more, I wouldn't call it more damaging, but I would say it can increase stress and frustration for these families that are already under so much stress and dealing with so much trauma, that trying to get them to do these, this difficult therapy work is just not gonna be helpful at this point.
Yeah. I love that you bring up the timing and talking to parents, and helping the parents navigate through it. When it comes to kiddos, I have seen personally, and just for your feedback, since you're still on the learning stage as well, that I find that there does sometimes tend to be like a transitional place that kids go from having an inflammatory basis for what they're experiencing to also some like learned and adaptive ways of dealing with the world because of the inflammatory stuff. So it just becomes part of their ways of relating to the world. And so we do sometimes see that transitional place where the inflammation is down or it's getting better, but we're still seeing some of these things persist, and that therapy can really become beneficial. But I got to tell you, I am just like dying to shift gears because we keep talking about like your experience with parenting. So I want to pause. We've got so many questions about therapy and all that, but I want to pause and talk about your experience, and as a parent and how it's affected your life and everything like that, for a little bit before we shift back to all the therapy, aspect, because like I said, I'm dying to hear about your professional expertise, but your personal experience is so interwoven with it that I really want to dive in there. So, I'd love to hear, I know that you're using homeopathy for your daughter. So I'd love to hear how you first learned about it, what you thought about it when you got started, and then let's go from there.
Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned earlier that the very first mention of it was the podcast where I heard you being interviewed, and you were talking about susceptibility, and that just made so much sense to me. And so, and then I joined the Facebook group, and I decided to just, and I had always been personally open to, you know, alternative medicine, naturopathic medicine. I hadn't used homeopathy at all, but I was just kind of more open to that world, I think. I've used other kind of forms in the past, so I think that was helpful in kind of, you know, trusting it. And I realized, you know, I said, this feels like the least invasive approach. And after all that we've been through already, I don't want a bunch of tests. I don't want a bunch of lab work. I don't, you know, that felt scary to me as a mom, and I just didn't want anything to do with that. So, and I figured, let's try this first. Let's try homeopathy. And if it doesn't work, we can always go to the other stuff, but I want to give this a shot. And my husband was totally on board. So yeah, we did the consultation with Resilience Naturopathic, and we moved forward. We got on the wait list, and luckily we got an appointment pretty quickly afterwards. And so we started treatment for her in February of 2023. So it's just been over a year, and it's, you know, it's been a roller coaster, but she's doing really well. And I want to say this too, looking at the clients that I've worked with, and then also just the families on the Facebook group, and just getting a sense for the severity of her case, I would call it mild to moderate. So she was still attending school. She was doing okay. You know, I mean, most of the behaviors were at home. So she was still functioning, but it was, you know, I would say more mild to moderate. And she, you know, had her ups and downs, but after a little over a year of treatment, I would say is about 75% healed or better. I mean, I don't know exactly. That's how it feels to me. I mean, she's so much better. Our family is so much calmer and better. I think it's still, as you both know, it can still be really triggering when she does have a flare. It feels like it takes you right back to that beginning place, but every time it happens and then she heals and gets better, I just know it's part of the process. And I have to kind of talk myself into that still. So even though I am a therapist and I have this knowledge, it doesn't make me immune to these trauma responses and how hard it is. So I will say that I don't have like this magic dust that I sprinkle on myself or my family that makes it all better. It's really hard, even as a therapist.
I wanted to hear a little bit more about your healing journey. If any more that you could share with us about your healing journey. And I love the I have to say that I love that you shared that you are still, even as a therapist, having some amount of trauma response, that you were prepared for it because you learned about things and like all of this. I'm sure that's super validating to so many parents to hear that, like, even somebody who's got professional expertise can still have a struggle with it occasionally. So I would love to hear, I mean, if you've got any more that you can share about your personal experience and like your healing journey. So maybe some of the symptoms that your daughter was experiencing, what your process of healing with homeopathy so far has been like, and any insights that you've got from that.
Yeah. So yeah, I will just go back to what you said about, how I hope it is validating for parents to hear, because, you know, I would love to sit here and say that, you know, I respond to her in a calm and gentle way 100% of the time, but that is just absolutely not true. I often have to walk away, take some breaths, or, you know, hand things off to my husband. It's really, yeah, it's still really challenging. But you know, I know from my work as a therapist, I'm a marriage and family therapist. I view the world through a systems perspective. And I know that oftentimes the mother is the nervous system of the family. And so if we are not regulated, our kids have a very hard time regulating. And so prioritizing my self-care and just being really intentional about trying to take care of myself. And that's really hard to do, but it has made a big difference in my daughter's healing and just my whole family's attitude towards her and toward, you know, it's just been really essential. And so if I have any advice for parents, and I feel like this could be a double-edged sword because I don't want there to be shame or guilt or pressure on moms or parents, but if it gives you permission to take care of yourself in those moments, then I hope that you'll take that. This isn't meant to be making you feel guilty or badly, but if you do have an opportunity, then take it, because it will benefit your family and your PAN's kid. At least that's what I've seen. So as far as symptoms, I mentioned earlier that her very first symptom was urinary urgency and frequency, and to the point where, I mean, I took her to the doctor thinking it was a UTI. It wasn't a UTI, and that would kind of come and go. So I just kind of thought maybe it's a weird thing where she just really wants to go to the, like, it was not long after she had potty trained. So I thought maybe she was just excited about potty training. It could have been a developmental thing. But it lasted for a good year and a half off and on. And so that was, looking back, her first symptom. And she also had a lot of sensory, issues, but she had, you know, frustrations with her pants and her socks being the right way. And she had to wear a certain pair of leggings and the certain shoes and the, and, you know, I thought she was, okay, maybe she's just really particular and has, I know a lot about sensory stuff. Obviously I'm not an OT, but I've worked closely with OTs. I've been trained in some OT stuff. So I kind of knew we all have our own sensory profile, and maybe this is, she's just sensitive. I'm sensitive too. And so I kind of wrote it off a little bit. But then that got worse to the point where it was turning into meltdowns before school in the morning. And then the OCD popped up, which was her very first compulsion was, she had to tuck in her comforter in her bed. And then I had to check it 3 times, and I'm like, oh no. Cause I know as a therapist, like, I'm like, no, red flag. And she's bringing me into this ritual, and like, I can't do this. So that was like a big deal. So, and then the separation anxiety that I mentioned, she also would have a lot of rigidity at bedtime with her routine. If it was even the littlest bit off, we had to redo it, or she wanted to redo it, and it would cause a full on meltdown. She was having a lot of sadness, just saying really kind of, you know, sad, dark things out of nowhere about, you know, not wanting to be here anymore. So all of those symptoms kind of popped up at the same time. And I would say the first symptom to go with homeopathy was, the OCD, I think she still has intrusive, it definitely has intrusive thoughts still, but the compulsions stopped almost immediately. or at least the compulsions we can see. So like the bed tucking stopped. Her sleep got a lot better. Her mood got better. It was more even. And I would say today the things we're still struggling with are the urinary frequency. I think you had mentioned that sometimes the first symptom to show up is the last to leave. Is that correct?
That can absolutely happen. Yep.
So we may be dealing with that. It's a stubborn one, but also to what you mentioned earlier about, is it now a habit or something that she's now just kind of, this is her life, where I'm trying to tease out, are these some things I can push back on now that she's more healed? Which kind of leads into another thing you had mentioned about like stages of therapy, and I feel like I'm at a point now with my daughter where I can challenge more of her intrusive thoughts, and I can have her like talk back to them, which is something I use, you know, like, let's talk back to that thought. What are we going to, you know, we're going to stop it. We're going to choose a new, more helpful thought. I definitely could not have done that a year ago, but she's at a place where I can help her do that now. And she can recognize like, oh, that's just kind of like that bully in my brain talking to me. That's just, you know, that's so, but again, that was not happening a year ago, nor was I trying to do that a year ago, because we were just too in it, and she was too sick to deal with that.
Yeah. No, we have to acknowledge that, like, we all have a bully in our brain, right? And that's the thing, is like, we all have intrusive thoughts. It's how intense they are and how disruptive they are to our life, right? And so I think it's a useful thing, no matter what, to at least have the awareness that all of us could use somebody telling us to talk back to the bully in our brain that is telling us things that we don't want to be thinking, or making us think things that we don't want to be thinking.
So as moms, we're navigating this storm, trying to figure things out for our kids, but at the same time, we're stuck in this space of trying to figure out how to do this as moms, and figure out how to mom pans and manage symptoms. I'm curious to know what you've done to help yourself in really stressful times. What type of support you have?
Yeah, because you mentioned, just like we say all the time, that like, your mom's the nervous system of the family. So I love that you said that, because we say that all the time too. So I'm super curious too. What have you done to help yourself as the nervous system?
Yeah, well, I've definitely been prioritizing exercise, which is good for my mental health too. I notice on the days that I don't, or the, let's be real, I don't do it every day, but the weeks that go by that I haven't done it, my mental health is not as good. So movement is super important for me. Time with my girlfriends and just getting out, and having fun, because especially for me, with how heavy things can feel at home and then what I do for a living, everything is pretty serious. And so I need that lightness, that fun, that joy. So surrounding myself with friends who will, you know, let's go out, let's go, you know, get some dinner, let's go get some coffee, has been really helpful. Trying to stay away from too much research. That's just, I go to research. That's who I am. I think a lot of parents in this situation feel like they have to, and many have, right? Many of us have had to find our own way, because this isn't, unfortunately, as well known as we need it to be. And so, but I also think that we can get ourselves into trouble if we spend so much of our time reading forums and blogs and listening to things. And so I have to stop myself sometimes and just step away and watch something for entertainment value, or read a book for, you know, for pleasure, and not just, you know, to research what's going on with my kid. It was interesting with homeopathy. I don't know if I consciously decided, or if it was more, I was just so in the thick of it that I didn't have I think it was more, I didn't have the brain space in the beginning, but I kind of just surrendered. And I was like, I'm just going to go with this. I've learned enough to trust it. And so I actually didn't dive in to learning all about homeopathy in the beginning. We have a wonderful doctor, and I'm trusting them, and we're just going to move forward with that. And so I did what he told me, and I tracked symptoms, and it wasn't until about 6 months into her healing that I could even start to do a little bit more research on homeopathy, because I was curious and wanted to know more, not because mm-hmm. it was a need or like I had to figure it out. Yeah. And I mean, homeopathy is so fascinating. I feel like I'm just obviously barely scratching the surface, but I love it. It feels very natural to me as a therapist, observing symptoms and all of that. It just feels like a really good fit. But I did want to note that it was like, it took me a good 6 months of just kind of trusting the process before I could even get to a place where I could learn more.
I hear what you're saying. The way I'm interpreting it anyway, is that you came to the research space from a place of curiosity rather than control. And when we can come to a place from curiosity, there's a whole different way that we interact with and engage with it than when we come from a place of like fear and control, that changes the experience. So I love to hear that was your experience.
Now let's switch back over into your professional expertise and tell us, if we've never done therapy before, where do we start? What do we do?
Sure. So I would say, I mean, if you are dealing with PANS, obviously you want a therapist who knows what it is, which I don't know right now the status of that. I'm in a consultation group, a monthly consultation group with other child therapists locally. And one other therapist in the group of, I think there were five or six of us, had heard of it before and knew about it. And that was because they also had a personal experience with it. So I'm finding that this is how it's getting out there, is that we have a lot of personal experiences and then we kind of go down the rabbit hole and then we learn about it. But as far as, you know, I never learned about this in school. This was, I mean, I went to school a while ago, but even then, like, I have colleagues that are more newly out of graduate school and they don't know about it either. So, and given, you know, that it is likely that we are, you know, therapists are likely the first people that these kids are seeing, because it is, you know, there are neuropsychiatric symptoms. I think it's so vital. Long story short, it would be great if your therapist knew about PANS, because it's so nuanced and really impacts treatment. As far as I've had to be very flexible with my PANS families, right? I mean, we know that from day to day, you can schedule a session a week out and that day of, they're having an awful day or even an awful hour and they can't make it to the session. So I get that because I'm a parent of one. And so I understand that, but I know that not all therapists can operate that way. So having that flexibility kind of built in, or you have to be aware of that from the get-go. As far as finding a therapist, if you are looking to use your insurance, I would recommend calling your insurance company and getting a list of providers. There are lots of websites with therapist databases like Psychology Today, and you can search by zip code and you can filter by population that they work with and just kind of see if you can get some consultation calls set up. Email is a really good way to get in touch with therapists too. Calling is nice, but it's honestly a lot harder to get back to people because we're either in session or we're doing, you know, notes or we're home with our families. So email is typically a really good way to get in touch with therapists too, from a logistics side. And then just keeping in mind, if you are in the beginning stages of healing with your child, that it might not be appropriate to do therapy for them. Maybe you need that support as a parent or caregiver, but it might not be the time yet for them to be working with a therapist.
Yeah. I would add that, you know, like you said, there's so many therapists that just aren't aware of this as a condition at all. And hopefully people are listening to this, that if you're using therapies that should be working and they're not, there's potentially inflammation that's underlying it. It could be a PANS, PANDAS type of situation or something else, right? And so it's not necessarily the go-to doesn't necessarily need to be medication, which is sometimes the initial approach in those sort of situations. But it might be, or medication might be warranted, but maybe not the medication that you would initially think of, given the presentations. I would say that one of the things that is helpful would be to also ask your therapist or anybody that you're working with if they're willing to talk to your PANS literate provider to get some more education. I've talked to lots of therapists to help educate them about the way just like the basics about PANS, like the nature of how it works, what's going on in the body, what they're likely to be successful with. I obviously don't have the expertise to conduct and like, you know, deliver therapy and like be a therapeutic partner. But I know it, that like, if you know, if you're in a flare state, you can't therapy away a flare. Like you just can't, because it's inflammation driven and antibody driven. So I want to sort of, yeah, Jody said we're going to go back to your expertise, professional expertise. I want to blend the two. I think most of our questions that we have left are really, truly a blending of the two. So I'm curious how your expertise as a therapist has influenced your parenting, especially once you realized that your child had PANS.
Yes. Okay. So I would say one of the biggest things is it gave me a little more patience and a lot more empathy for her, knowing that it was a relief to me, like, oh, okay, she didn't, you know, it's inflammation and she can't control this. And it doesn't always make it easier to deal with. It's still very challenging, but it did give me that just a little bit of extra strength and patience to manage. So framing it that way. And I've seen that with the families that I work with too, because it can be so damaging to these family relationships, right? There's so much, like we said, trauma. There can be a lot of resentment with parents toward their child, siblings toward the child that has it. It's really, really hard. So I think being able to look at it from that lens has been just super helpful. Again, it doesn't make everything better. It doesn't mean I respond perfectly, but it definitely gives me that extra patience. Especially early on, it was like, oh, okay, now we know what's going on. So. Yes.
I'm curious if you have any strategies with all this in mind, any strategies that might be helpful for parents who are managing a PANS child at home, or like maybe even a teacher who's managing them at school.
Yes. So for me personally, and this is the feedback I give parents too, is at home, just trying to minimize outside stuff, especially if you just got a diagnosis where you're just now figuring out what's going on. You know, we have a lot of really busy kids, which isn't necessarily bad, but I think it can be really hard for children who are dealing with this. And we have to lower that expectation, at least for now. And I think there's also grief that comes with that, mm-hmm. right? There's grief that comes with I can't participate in soccer this year, or we can't do that birthday party, because at least I know for my child, one 2-hour birthday party on a Saturday that's overstimulating and full of sugar can ruin our entire weekend, and then maybe even into the next week. And so it's a balance, of course, but I think, I guess, giving parents permission to say no to things while you're kind of in this stage, but then also, like I said, recognizing that that could really be hard and there's some grief around that, and that that's okay. It won't hopefully be forever, right? We're hoping that they heal and that they can start participating in these things. And then also just celebrating. I know you both do such a beautiful job of celebrating the wins and the good things. And I think that is so essential. Celebrating the good days or good moments, journaling them so you have them written down, sharing them with your partner or a friend, because that's what's going to carry you, right? Like that's going to carry you through to the next, when there's another flare and you're like, oh, okay, but then it was good. And I know that it can be good again and it will be good again. Mm-hmm. So really highlighting those good things, I would think are the good things for at least to do at home. And then for school, educating, which I know is hard and exhausting for parents dealing with this, but we kind of have to do it. If we want to help our child, we have to advocate. And so, and I have, you know, offered, and I have worked with school administration and teachers to kind of give them an education, kind of like what you were saying, Dr. Barr, as far as you working with the therapist. I like to do that with school personnel sometimes if I can. Getting a 504 plan or an IEP in place, and making sure that they include accommodations for your child's worst day, right? So you don't want to think about how they're maybe doing right now, but like think about their worst flare. If they're having a lot of difficulty getting to school, or if there's a particular part of school that's really triggering for them, you want that accommodation included. And so making sure that you are on top of that and knowing your rights based on, you know, your state for all of these, because I think parents have a lot more rights than they realize. And school personnel, I mean, we hope that they're helpful and on board, but a lot of times you do have to be an advocate when it comes to that.
I just want to call out a couple of resources that we have for anybody who wants to get a little bit more support with this. So Jody and I have a video that we did. It's available on YouTube. We'll put a link in the show notes for that's geared toward educators so that you could give it as a link to somebody if they want to learn more and learn about like the types of accommodations and stuff that's going to be needed, what to expect with these kiddos. So that's a tool that we have available for you. And we also have an episode that is with a school advocate talking all about how to go about getting the accommodations that you need. So we'll also put a link to that episode in our show notes. I got one more question. I know I've been dominating the conversation today. I'm sorry, Jody. I know you've got tons of questions. I'm going to get one more question out and then hand it over to you. So I want to hear your thoughts, because I've seen so much magic when you use homeopathy and therapy together, both personally and for lots of my clients for all different sorts of concerns, not just PANS pandas, not just like PANS PTSD as we call it, but lots of different things. I feel like the two together are like this synergistic thing that makes it so that both work more effectively, because we're tackling things both from like the obstacles with our thought obstacles, as well as the susceptibility to those thoughts at the same time. So I'm curious, in your experience that you've had, I know not a ton at this point, but in the experience that you've had, how has homeopathy complemented therapy?
Yes. And I hope my answer is different in a few years from now, because yes, I am early in the game of this, and I have only had a handful of clients using PANS clients using homeopathy and doing therapy. So I don't have a huge, population to base this on. But what I have seen is, I agree with you, magic. It helps them access what I'm trying to give them, right? It's like there was a brick wall up before, they weren't able to get there, and now that wall is being taken down. They're able to see things in a new way. So like I said, I really hope that in a few years that I have even more information to share with you on this, because I do think there's so much potential for that synergy of homeopathy therapy. So
it's really interesting to hear you say that, because I feel the same way as like if I have certain people that I've worked with in the past that were just using homeopathy, and I say, I think it's time to bring in therapy. It's like, it removes a wall, because if there's like I said, thought obstacles, like your thoughts can sometimes be an obstacle if they're like learned patterns of thinking, rather than just the susceptibility, that we can see walls start to come down and we see movement happen with the homeopathic remedy that we weren't before. It just tends to like really accelerate things. But again, in PANS cases, this is only the case once we've really gotten the inflammation under control and the misdirected immune response improving. So we're usually seeing therapy be more effective and more beneficial in the second half of healing, when we're seeing not as much movement with the homeopathy and like a lot more of like the inflammation and detox and all of the things that are not working so well at the beginning, working much better, that therapy can really come in and just really make things take off.
Yes.
When is therapy not useful in a PANS child? Have you ever seen a negative reaction to therapy with a PANS kiddo?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of what we've already talked about, is it's just doing it too early. It's just really, I don't think that it's the type of therapy. I still think it would be appropriate, but it's the timing. It was too early in the game and too much. It was too triggering for them. So talking about the intrusive thoughts was just way too triggering, and we couldn't get them back, and we couldn't kind of, de-escalate. And so that doesn't happen often because now I have such a feel for, you know, well, I obviously ask like, well, how long have you known about this? Or if I'm the one who's, you know, pursuing the diagnosis or helping them get a diagnosis, then I know it's early in the game as far as like they haven't done any healing. So again, I would say it's just the timing of it. It's not necessarily the specific type of therapy that would be damaging or anything like that.
Yeah. And what do you think about the importance of other family members also seeking therapy for themselves? And really kind of a two-part question, therapy during the healing journey, but really especially what kind of rings true to me is that time that you were talking about a little while ago, where you're kind of shifting into this mode where your kiddo's doing better and you're trying to parse out what is what, and working through that as a mom has its own special challenges. So what do you think about therapy for, you know, all family members through all of that?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it definitely can be helpful for every family member. Everyone's impacted by this. Everyone who lives with it is impacted. This is a little bit separate, but super important too. I work so closely with the caregivers and parents in my, of the kids I work with, regardless of it, of its, if it's PANS or not. That's just how I approach therapy. I would say if you're, you know, pursuing therapy and your therapist, your child's therapist does not include you in treatment at all, or is it's minimal, that's a concern to me. I think A, because I don't think it will be effective. And especially with things like OCD, parents are often so integrated into the rituals that, or the compulsion piece of this, that if you're not working with the parents to help, you know, combat those things, then it's not going to be effective treatment. And it's just, I just feel like it's so important that parents are really involved. So that's a little bit separate than what you asked, Jody. But yeah, I think as parents, it's so important to get the support. I mean, I've received support from other PANS moms and from the Facebook group, but it still can feel very isolating. So having a therapist reflect and validate and all of the things that we need as moms, and then even as our child heals, getting back into life can feel really scary, right? So kind of having someone help guide you with that, right? Like, and dealing with that trauma, potential trauma response of like, can we do this now? And it, what's it going to be like? And dealing with, you know, those triggers, I think could be really helpful. And then, yeah, for siblings, I know, you know, siblings are really impacted by this too. So that could be helpful for them to give them a space to kind of process everything that's been going on and put it all into perspective and educate them too, right? Like the kind of reframing the family culture of like, this is what happened to us, and kind of being able to tell their story, I think is really important.
I'm glad you brought up siblings. We interviewed Dr. Lindsay Wells, who is the author of Super Sam and the Journey to the Fighting Battle Against PANS and PANDAS. I'm butchering the title, I know for sure. But we'll put a link to the show notes for the episode where we interviewed her, and a link to that book too. If you haven't checked it out, it might be a useful tool for your practice as well. Just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
I think I'm channeling the PANS moms that are watching right now, the I'm fine moms, because I was the I'm fine mom. And I wish somebody would have told me, no, you are not fine, that eventually you're going to have to unwind all of this and work through it. So that's something that I really wish that I would have done for myself, really all my family members through the healing journey. That was one little piece that I missed because I was so sure that I was fine. And I wasn't fine. So what about strategies that you would offer parents that are dealing with overwhelm or burnout or trauma and just the anxiety that comes along with raising a PANS kiddo?
I mean, I think it's kind of echoing the same of just getting that support. I know I mentioned earlier the education piece. I think for me, one of the hardest parts about dealing with this, about being a PANS mom, is people don't know what it is. And so not only am I in the thick of this really challenging thing I'm dealing with, but I have to then educate other people on it. And I think, you know, for parents like me, who my child was mostly fine at school, I say mostly because I saw a lot of stuff, but I don't know that other people would see it. When I share this, they're like, what? No, what? They're fine. She's fine. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so it's having to educate, and then your experience isn't validated. And so I think I'm so appreciative of what you guys do, because you are lightening that burden for families who are in the thick of it. The education and the advocacy is huge because it is so exhausting to have to explain what this is. So many times I didn't even want to do it, and I still don't. Like, it depends on the day. It's really hard, as I'm sure you both know, to have to explain to family member, extended family or friends what they're even dealing with. And like, oh, maybe I've kind of heard of that. Like, isn't it this? And like, no, that's not it. Let me tell you about it. Mm-hmm. And it is important that we do that, because we can't get the proper support unless people know what we're dealing with. But then it's that catch 22 of like, oh, like, but then it's so tiring to have to educate, and I don't have the energy to do it. So,
yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do. We're hopeful that this podcast, this episode especially, but this podcast is a tool that people can use. So we encourage and ask that you actually share, if you can, you know, follow us or subscribe on Instagram, or not, well, Instagram too, but follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube, whatever, so that you can get updates for new episodes that might be useful and relevant for somebody. And we're so grateful for the experts and parents and those who have two roles like you do, that can come in and share their experience, because the reality is there are people who might not be able to see it for a person that they know in their life, but when they hear it again and again from strangers, somehow it makes it more real and more solid, and people can believe it. Because I'm sure that, you know, you've heard it, while you're also trying to educate people, you're getting lots of ideas about, no, you just need to parent this way, or you just need to do this thing differently. And lots of like advice for the things that you're seeing, they think is something else, or that they have in their mind is related to a whatever. And so that's just another level of like weight that gets put on things. Well, Kelly, I am so grateful for the time that you've shared with us, as both a therapist and definitely as a mom. Your voice is valuable, and I know that there are some people who are hearing your story and seeing themselves and getting some relief from this. So thank you so much for that time that you've given us, and that the vulnerability in sharing. How can people get in touch with you if they want to connect with you? I know that you're not likely able to see people from all over the country or all over the world. So, but how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about you or potentially work with you?
Sure. Yeah. I'm licensed in California, so I can do, you know, I can see people in the entire state. I do offer virtual, but it's kind of a case by case. So I like to assess and make sure it's a good mm-hmm. fit. But yeah, you can find me. My website is my name, kellynicasio.com. All my contact information is on there. And so email is the best way to get in touch with me. And my email address is on my website. So head over there and you can learn more about me too, and just kind of what I offer. But thank you both so much for having me. And again, for the wonderful work that you are both doing for all PANS families. I really appreciate it.
I'm so thrilled to hear how well your daughter is doing too. And just how far you've come in such a short period of time. And I have to say that, like, I am grateful that you were willing to trust me and what I was saying and the team that we've put together. We tend to see that when people are willing to like, just start with homeopathy and just dive in and like, let us handle things. Let us be the experts in that area, that we have a smoother path. And it's, you know, it sounds like you've had a smoother path than some people. So I'm really, really happy to hear how well she's doing. And I know that we're recording this well before it's going to air, just because of the nature of how PANS and PANDAS goes. We want to make sure this information gets to people right at an appropriate and useful time. So I'm hoping that when this airs, that you've got an even better update. If you want to come back and share anything with us, we're happy to have it. And I can't wait to see the impact that you have on the therapy world to make sure that we're getting more and more information out there, so that the first line intervention, because most parents are going to take their kids to therapy before they're going to take them to like a psychiatrist or something. doing. So therapists are really, I think, have potential to be a first line intervention for finding and identifying PANS and PANDAS. So I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing, and I can't wait to see the impact that you're going to make. So
thank you so
I'll make sure we put links to everything in the show notes. Thank you again, Kelly. And we'll talk soon, everybody. Take care.
Bye, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.